start by telling me your name and where you were born and when you came to this part of British Columbia?
Oh, yes. I was, my name is Anna Arthur. I was originally Anna Vanderveen. I was born in Victoria to missionary parents. We came to this part of the country, Coquitlam, in 1920, and with the exception of 6 years, I've been here ever since.
When did you begin to work?
Well, actually, I was trained as a teacher, and I taught for a while in the 1930s, and was married in 1935, had a family, and didn't work again until 1943.
Was it difficult to find work as a teacher during the Depression?
Yes, yes, exceptionally so. So hard that I ended up having a private kindergarten for preschool children. There weren't kindergartens in the school system at that time. And so I had one of my own, and it was quite successful.
And when you were married, did you do any work during the time you were married at all, outside of the home? Or?
Oh, yes. I started in 1943 when I had two children, the oldest of whom was going to school, but the smaller one was at home still. And it was fortunate at that time that we shared a house with my mother. So she was able to share the care of the child.
And when did you? Where did you begin to work at that time?
Well, it was during the war, and we lived not too far from the Boys Industrial School. And they were in need of teachers at that time, and they kept pestering me to go and teach. I felt that I had a commitment at home, and I didn't want to do that. However, they kept at me, and I finally agreed to go on a part-time basis for half a day each day. And that I did until my husband became ill in 1945. And he was in a sanitarium for nearly a year. So I went to work full time.
Right. What was the Boys Industrial School?
It was a school for boys who had run afoul of the law, incorrigible boys. At that time, there was no place either for emotionally disturbed boys. So they were all put together, packed in together. It was too bad, but it was the best that could be done at the time.
What kind of educational programs were there for these children?
Well, many of them were very, very behind in school. They had all sorts of problems, of course, and our chief interest was in getting them up with their peers so that when they left the school, they would be able to go into classes where they weren't a way behind. We had excellent programs. There was an excellent industrial arts program there, and a full educational program from the lowest grades through high school.
Did you and the employer recognize that special skills were needed to teach these children?
I don't think that the employer really realized just how special the skills were, but they were special programs had to be arranged for each individual child, and we were always preparing material, individual material, to fit the needs of each individual person.
Was there special training for this?
Not very much at that time. I took courses whenever I could, whenever there were courses available at the university. I spent summers taking courses, and I used to go to summer school in Victoria to help in this kind of thing. I never did complete university because I spent so much time specializing in special programs for these children, taking special courses, that I never got a complete university.
Right. What were the relations like between the staff who taught there? Did people get along well? Was there a sense of solidarity?
Yes, there was amongst the teaching staff. It was sort of a little apart. Although most of the staff seemed to recognize that here was a place where there was some discipline and some limits set for these people who hadn't had any and were playing out their needs for some kind of limits to their actions.
In the school, as a teacher, did you have to be particularly sort of patient or tolerant?
Oh, yes. One certainly did. We had all kinds of children, all races and creeds. Children from very disadvantaged backgrounds. And it was pretty hard for them to understand sometimes the things that most of us take for granted. Certain standards of conduct that were unknown to them. And one had to be very patient and loving. It was rather hard to love some of them, but that's what they desperately needed.
Okay. What kind of relationship was there between the administration and the staff?
It was a relationship which went along fine as long as it was an administration to staff. But if there were needs coming from the staff, being expressed from the staff and so on, it wasn't quite as well accepted. As long as it was a one-way street, things went very well. But when the staff started speaking up, it was not well received sometimes.
Were there ever differences in conception between the administration and the staff in how the students should be taught?
Yes, and handled. Yes, we had a very difficult time when there was a real dust-up there. They brought in a whole new type of program, a permissive type of program, which it just was very difficult for the people that were working with the children all the time to accept. It was a relaxation of placing limits. So the children had no recognition of where certain type of behavior had to stop. And it was a complete antithesis of what had previously gone on. So it was very difficult for the working staff to accept.
Right. How were the wages and the hours of work?
Oh, those days. The hours of work were long. It wasn't so bad for the teaching staff, but for the supervisors and other staffs, the hours were very long, as much as 12-hour days at one time. Especially was this true at the mental hospital, which was adjoining Boys Industrial School, and for whose employees we were all striving to better conditions. The working week was long. They used to work several days and then get two or three off together. And the wages were not good at all. My husband recently said to me that his pension check now is greater than the salary he received when he started to work at the Provincial Mental Hospital. Five times greater, I think he said.
How did people become interested in organizing a union or an association?
Well, it became very apparent that unless we did organize, we could never change things. We could never improve things. And at the provincial mental hospital, there were some people who had been brought up in the old country and were accustomed to the union way of life. And they were strongly urging that unionization begin. That's actually how it started.
How did you get involved in the organizing campaign?
Well, I have never been one to sit back and let things happen. And when there have been things that I felt were not right, I had to speak out strongly about them. And I was doing it then. And when one has a high profile, one gets involved.
Were other members of your family also involved in...
Yes, my husband was interested in it, so we had a very supportive role for one another and had a sort of common interest and goal, this sort of thing.
Did he work at Essendale?
Yes, he was a psychiatric nurse for many years.
Did you come from a family that had been involved in trade union activity?
Not at all. Not at all. My people were all professional people, ministers and doctors and so on. So unionism wasn't in it at all.
Had they come from a socially conscious background?
Very much so. Very much so. Very concerned, all of them, about the welfare of people. So I suppose it was a natural thing to occur.
What issues do together the People for an Association?
Well, hours of work was certainly one of them. They were working towards... one of the things that did it especially was a medical plan. And from that medical plan that evolved from the Government Employees Association here... was what used to be called GEMS, and that was a Government Employees Medical Services, and it was actually formed by this small group here. It has now evolved into the BC Medical Plan. It was, from all the plans that were in existence, it was the one that was chosen as the best.
Right. Okay. Was the association... a union or an association or a federation of different...
It was called an association. And I expect that's what it was. In a way, it was a federation because there were several associations involved in it. Victoria had a large group. New Westminster had a group. And finally, others in smaller places who were employed by the government formed small groups. So actually, in a way, it was a federation.
Right. Did it try and group together people who had different kinds of jobs?
Yes, and that was one of the difficulties, especially here at the hospital. We had tradespeople, nurses, clerical staff, medical staff, all sorts of people. And it made it very difficult to negotiate on behalf of a complete group when there were all these varying interests and conditions.
Right. Was the workforce at the school mostly male or mostly female?
It was mostly male. There were perhaps three or four women out of probably 50 people.
What work did the women do?
There were some office people. There was a nurse, matron, and there were some supervisors who actually were housekeepers. They they supervised the boys in making beds and cleaning dorms and did the mending and so on. And then there was a teacher.
You.
Yes.
Were there separate jobs for women and men at the school?
Yes, yes, very much so.
What were the differences in the work between the men and the women?
Well, the men did some supervising of the boys in the house work, but very little. It was just for the heavier work, perhaps polishing floors and that type of thing. And mostly it was outside work. They supervised them in athletic activities. Would take them on trips, walks, and so on. We had at one time a very good band there, and that was, of course, all male. That was the sort of thing. They never got involved in really treating these children as children. There wasn't any of the mothering process, of course, because they weren't mothers, but some of the women staff did provide that kind of thing.
Right. What were did women have more or less responsibility than men in the school, or the same?
I imagine in some areas it was the same. I would say that the woman who was the stenographer there actually was a key person in the administration. She was a very, very necessary part of it and very good at what she was doing. And the nurse matron I think probably their responsibilities, while they were different, were just as important.
Were there differences in pay between
men? Oh, yes, yes. Yes, that was always a thing that we were working to improve, that our cry was equal pay for equal work, and it's always been difficult to decide the equalness of work. However, in the nursing staffs at the Provincial Mental Hospital, it wasn't too difficult to do that. And there, the difference was considerable in the wages that were received. In fact, for a long time, Essendale was a school of nursing, for psychiatric nursing, and students received a certain stipend, and there was considerable difference in what the male students received from what the female students received. And that carried on right until the time that this nursing education was taken over by the BCIT, when people have to pay tuition to attend.
So the female nurses had the same kind of courses and costs?
Yes, exactly, just exactly, but didn't receive nearly as much.
Was this issue of equal pay for equal work one of the things that concerned you?
Yes, yes, very much so. It was not just the fact that women were not being paid as much. It was the fact that anyone should be doing the same kind of work and not be receiving the same pay for it. It seems to me a terribly unjust thing that two people can be doing the same job and not be receiving the same pay for it.
Was equal pay for equal work a goal of the entire association?
It finally became so after a few of us kept at it and persevered. Yes, it did.
How did you fight for it to be an issue inside the association?
Well, I was fortunate because I was expressive and outspoken and totally dedicated to this idea. And I became a member of the provincial executive, where I had a voice that reached every association in the federation, if you will. I also was president of this local, which at that time had 1,200 members, and I was president for two-year terms. And I was listened to, which was helpful in getting this cause forwarded.
Right. Were there other women who worked around the issue?
Oh, yes. Yes, there were several that rallied to the cause. There were some, especially in the nursing staffs, where it was such an obvious injustice. Yes, they did work hard.
Did most people in the union support this concept?
No, there were some of the men felt that that the jobs weren't equal, that they were doing more, that that very often if things were really violent, that the men got called on sometimes to assist. But it worked the other way too. They didn't realize that sometimes women were called upon to assist. And it took a while to convince some of those people, and I'm not sure that some of them were ever convinced.
Was this an issue that you negotiated with Victoria?
Yes, yes, but it always came back to this issue of proving equalness of work. And it was very difficult to do until finally we got job specifications and job descriptions. And at that point, things began to become very apparent.
If you were, when you were motivating the need for equal pay, for equal work, what kind of things would you say to people to try and convince them around this issue?
Are you speaking of the people we were negotiating with, or the other employees?
Other employees.
Oh, well, it wasn't very hard if you were a woman who was receiving less money to be convinced that something should be done about it, and it was only by speaking out and organizing and increasing our number of members, of active members, that something could be done to change it. That, I think, was the first thing, making people realize that change was possible. People accepted things as they were at that time. It had always been that way, and it probably always would. So that, I guess, was probably the most difficult thing, making people realize that surely we could change things. It wasn't beyond the realm of possibility at all. And that got people interested.
Did you ever have to counter the argument that women had other incomes because they were married, or that their primary role was to be married?
Yes. That I encountered that many times. And for the last 10 years of my working life, I worked for the Department of Manpower and Immigration, in which I was dealing with employers, dealing with people looking for work. And I don't know how often women would come in looking for work and tell me that if people such as I were not working at a job, that would leave a job for her husband to do. And my argument to that, the way I countered it, was to say, well, the job was there for her husband. All he had to do was qualify for it and pass the necessary examinations for the civil service and so on, which often just left the person hanging high and dry.
Right. Were there other inequalities in pay within the provincial government, like between different national groups or ethnic groups?
I don't remember that. I don't recall that ever arising. No. One thing that does strike me about inequities is even now that for people who work in the federal government, when I worked for the federal government, the job was paid. They had reached that point in the federal government. The job was paid. Now, a man and a woman working at the same job, receiving the same salary, should receive the same pension, and likely do, until one of the spouses dies. The man can remarry without losing his pension, but the woman can't. Now, she worked in exactly the same way for it as the man, and that is still in effect.
Right. Okay. You had children while you were working.
Yes.
How many?
Yes, two daughters.
And can you talk a bit about the different kinds of child care arrangements you had to make while you worked?
Yes. For a time, as I told you, we lived, shared a house with my mother, and she cared for my daughter, the younger daughter, during that period of the day when I was away. Later on, we moved from her home, and I had to get a girl to come in and look after the younger one. I was fortunate in my work that when they started school, their hours were much the same as my hours. We had the same days off together, weekends, school. We had all had school hours, so it worked out very well.
Did your husband work shift work as well?
Yes, yes, he did. So we could share the time if something happened that I couldn't get home right after school, and he was off on the afternoon. Well, it worked out that he would be around to look after the children. It worked out very well. We were most fortunate. The time, I think, when it's most difficult for working mothers is when a child is ill. And then there's a conflict of loyalties. You're loyal to your child, and you're loyal to your employer. And it's very difficult for a working mother to make arrangements to care adequately for a child.
Right.